Welcome to the Semicolon Podcast. This is a safe place to discuss a variety of topics centered around mental health. I am your host, Ashley McClellan, a social worker who has learned a lot about mental health along the way. I am here to be a voice, to support, and to learn with you all. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Semicolon Podcast. I am very excited to be back to share content with you all. During this isolation period, it's a good time to listen to podcasts, to maybe read those books you keep pushing off to the side, or to even do some spring cleaning. I have been doing all three. Unfortunately, the child welfare field doesn't stop. So I am still working, which is a blessing, but it comes with still having to be out in the field. It's scary, I can't lie. I'm just very thankful for such a supportive team and office. We all have truly came together to support each other as best as we can, but most importantly, while remaining safe. I was talking to my favorite public defender from Kane County, and he informed me that the last pandemic we had was in 1918. He stated his grandmother survived that pandemic and that she would be turning 100 this year, which is a blessing. I'm like, wow, this lady has experienced two pandemics in her lifetime. So I did some research because this was way before my time, but the pandemic from 1918 was known as the Spanish flu, and you all, it lasted from January 1918 to December of 1920. It affected 500 million people. I pray the pandemic of COVID-19 does not last that long or affect that many people. I'm praying for the families of those that have lost their lives to this virus. You all, it's important that we take precaution and do what we are told, such as practicing social distancing, washing our hands really well, not touching our face, eyes, mouth, etc. But before I go too much further, I am not alone today. I would like to introduce someone that is very dear to my heart. We met in 2006 and attended the same high school and college together for undergrad. We went to different schools for grad school, and she has moved state to state 3 times, but nonetheless, we have not lost our friendship. In fact, it only continues to grow stronger. This person and I have shared many similar experiences, like you wouldn't believe it. What I love most about our friendship is that she laughs with me. She cries with me. She prays with me. So with all of that being said, I would like to introduce to you all my best friend, licensed clinical social worker, Jamia Warner.
Hi, Ashley. I appreciate being able to do this podcast with you. It's been a long time coming, and yes, moving state to state has definitely impacted that. But thank you. I think what you're doing is such a great thing. Is needed. And I don't think a lot of people understand how important it is to take care of our mental health and know that our stories aren't finished.
Exactly. I truly appreciate that. And we are grateful to have you here to sit here and just talk about all things mental health. So we do have a few topics that we will be discussing today, which I'm pretty excited about. So we'll be talking about how childhood trauma presents as adult anxiety and how providers also need therapy. So I did briefly touch on childhood trauma presenting as adult anxiety in my episode, which is titled Letter to My Inner Child. So in the episode, I explained that having an inner child basically means you may still be acting out as an adult the pain suffered by your inner child. So Jamia, do you want to touch a little bit about?
Of course. So a lot of people tend to believe that anxiety isn't real, that you could pray it away, that you can just take some time out and it'll go away. But what they don't realize is that sometimes anxiety doesn't present itself as the normal textbook lookalike of anxiety. So for me, I had to take on the idea that my anxiety stemmed long before I knew it was anxiety. So grew up in the same neighborhood as you. It's very similar conditions. I recognized that there were times where I had panic attacks and didn't even know it. But I thought it was because, oh, it was a lot going on. It was a commotion and I couldn't handle it. And so now as a clinician, I have to start recognizing certain, I guess, symptoms within myself. So, for example, the way that my childhood trauma started presenting itself as anxiety as an adult was one day I was driving to work while I was living in D.C. and I was talking to my mother, and my mother stresses me out most times. But it was one of those conversations where I felt like everything was going well. Then she said something, and then I started feeling myself getting really warm and really hot and starting to pant a little bit. And I was like, what is going on? And so I'm like, Mom, I got to call you back, because, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't feel good. But then I took a step back and I realized that it was a part of my childhood trauma coming out. It was a part of me who shuts down when arguments would start arising. It was a part of me that felt scared. It was a part of me that started feeling anger, and it was presenting itself physically. And so that was the key for me to be like, it's time to go to therapy. As a clinician, you know, you always tell people like, yeah, therapy is the best thing. You need it. Talk to somebody. It's unbiased. But it was hard for me as a clinician to go to it because it felt like I should know what I'm doing. I should be able to handle this.
Thanks.
And so even though I thought I could do it, you know, on my own, and I was like, well, I already got it. I can identify me having panic attacks. Great. I don't need to talk to anybody. I started recognizing they would come on even more. It would hit me at the strangest times. It would hit me at work. It would hit me sitting at my desk, at the coffee room. You know, anytime I would talk to my mother, I felt myself having those anxiety attacks. Anytime I felt myself rethinking or reliving a childhood memory that was per se traumatic, I felt those feelings of anxiety come on. So it's really frustrating to know that these things could be avoided if some childhood trauma incidents didn't happen.
Exactly.
But it's a part of life. And so I think it's just something that I guess you have to work through a lot in order to understand how your childhood trauma can identify itself as anxiety and or depression as an adult.
And it's funny that you, you know, stated that, because it just made me think about when we were at U of I and I was getting ready to go to an event for my internship. And of course, during that drive, same as you, I was talking to my mom, and, you know, she said something that triggered me. I just started crying like uncontrollably, you know, screaming and everything. So luckily I was close, because I'm like, I literally just had to like pull over and park. And then the my boss that I was meeting there, I literally called her like, I cannot come in there. Like, I just was not in a good headspace, and, you know, I just couldn't, and I literally had to go back home that day.
It is real. It's odd. It's like, you don't recognize what triggers you until you're triggered, and if you're not aware that this is per se a trigger, you will continue the behavior, you know? A lot of times, we don't even recognize when we trigger. We just kind of sweep it under the rug like, oh, it happened. It's not. I mean, even like a few months ago, I was preparing for an out-of-town guest to come in, and I was in Walmart, and I felt myself starting to get like panicky. You know, I'm at the cashier. I'm trying to hurry up. I'm thinking of all the things I need to do. And next thing I know, I'm literally feeling like I'm about to fall out in front of the cashier. And a part of me was like, okay, maybe you haven't eaten enough. Which was kind of true. But the other part was, oh my God, this is anxiety coming up. Why is it coming up? It's coming up because I felt pressured. And it wasn't from the other person. It was because of myself who felt that if I did not do this, correctly, if I hadn't prepared myself, if I don't make sure I have my linens, make sure we have groceries, I would be a failure, which then led me back to thinking like, oh my God, this is the same pressure I used to put myself under in high school and in college. Is if I didn't perform well, I wasn't good enough. And I would have failed this task no matter what everybody else felt about the situation. I personally would have felt I failed. And so that's another example how I had to link back Jamia the adult, Jamia the teen, Jamia the child to what was currently happening at that moment to reground myself and center myself to make myself feel like, you know what? It's fine.
Right.
It's okay. Slow down. Mm-hmm. Take a breath. So it was a very, very strange feeling. It, you know, even then, I stopped going to Walmart for like at least 3 weeks after that. Because I felt like every time I got to Walmart, I felt panicky. If it was like for a financial reason, or if it was because I felt like I was underprepared, or I just felt like every time I got to the cashier at Walmart for like at least 2 weeks consecutively, I started to have panic attacks. And I was like, nope, going to avoid Walmart because it's a trigger for me. Walmart always used to trigger me, but this was a different type of trigger.
And I just want to say, you all, from the outside looking at, you know, you're looking at people, you think all is well. And I have always, you know, just seen, you know, Jamia just put together, you know, things like that. I'm like, she was number two, top of our class. You know, we both went to U of I together. We both majored in social work, you know. And I remember, you remember that one time, one of them social work classes, when I failed that test. And then the teacher, what she said, like, I couldn't get nothing higher than a D or a C. And then the lady seen me in the lobby crying. And I'm like, but I end up passing that class with a B. I don't know if it was my tears or what, but it's like with her. And then you guys know I also had my friend Darvon on as a guest. And these two, I just noticed how, like, they always just put so much pressure on themselves. And, you know, at the end of the day, they did great, especially when it came to schooling.
Yeah, Chav, that was difficult. Woof. If I would have known this about myself, what I know, like what I know now, and if I could apply it back then while we were in school, baby, I think I would have.
Yeah, I think if we would have had the knowledge and the education we had, even back to high school, I think things would have been so much different for us all. You know, because I didn't know during high school, you all know I was a mess. You know, I would text them all the time. I just want to die. I just, you know, and people looking at me like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I don't even know what's wrong with me, you know. But I'm just so.
Nothing's better than you crying on your birthday because it was about to, a week before your birthday because it was raining the exact Wednesday before. And you just were an emotional wreck because you just knew and you projected your feelings that next week on that Wednesday. It was going to rain on your birthday.
I don't know, little thing. I in high school, I would be sitting at the cafeteria table reading a book and just bust out crying. Like,
yeah, child.
I just really wish. You know, when you think about, look back on stuff and just think like, really? But like I said, I just really wish we had. And like I was telling people, Jamia, I didn't really learn about mental health until I got to grad school and until I started working in the field. Has that been like the same for you? Or
pretty much so. Growing up in a Christian household, I was always told to pray it away. If I had negative feelings, all I need to do was go to church, read my Bible. So a lot of mental health stuff wasn't brought up. So like you, yes, I guess I would say the first time I really encountered the idea of like therapy was maybe around the time that we had lost my cousin, Kaya. And I know that's when, you know, you could kind of hear whispers of, yeah, y'all might need to get some help. You know, this was a traumatic time. And I'm like, okay. But we had death before and nobody ever mentioned like therapy. Right. And so when I got to grad school and I decided to go, I wanted to be child welfare. Let's start there. Because of the situation I had dealt with my cousin. And I felt like that was my sign of like, I need to help. I want to be with children. I need to do this. But for better reasons other than I was not about to take the ACT over again or take the basics exam again. School social work and child welfare was out of the game. And that's when I remember at orientation, I was like, well, I'm changing my concentration to mental health because I feel like that's something that I should know something about. And so that's when I learned about it more. And that's when I actually started taking it to heart more. And it sucked because I couldn't really, I wish I knew what I knew then back way yonder, you know? Because if I could have told my family members early on, y'all need to go to therapy, half of our childhood trauma wouldn't have happened, you know? Some of the stuff that we experienced, some of the toxicity between those intergenerational curses, they would have been broken. And as a Christian, I truly believe that God did not create me not to be able to pray and go to therapy. He created doctors to fix stuff, so I don't understand how we don't understand how clinicians are here to help not necessarily fix the brain, but help us regulate our emotions and understand our emotions as well as practice Christianity or what other religions, you know, we may believe in. But I think they go hand in hand, and so it's weird because a lot of people still think that you shouldn't go to therapy. Like, you should still pray, right?
My mom is one of them.
Child. I mentioned therapy in my family, and everybody like, but why? I don't need that. I talked to God. Okay, I'll talk to him, too. And guess what he told me? Take my black butt to therapy. And I never forget when I told my mom I first went to therapy. She had all types of attitudes, child. And it was weird, you know. She really felt that I didn't need to go. And it really hurt my feelings to tell her, I'm going because of you.
Exactly.
I don't think she talked to me after that for a little while. But it felt good. It was necessary. And it was difficult. It was a difficult decision to even say I'm going to therapy, you know what I mean? Like, it was a difficult decision to even spread that information with people. And I'm not going to sit here and as a social worker, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm perfect and I'm just quote unquote great when it comes to mental health, because I'm not. Because even when people, you know, might post on Facebook or other social media, raise your hand if you ever went to therapy, I don't like those posts. I don't put myself out there. And I feel like to a certain extent, it's hypocritical for me not to feel comfortable enough to say that I go to it because of some of the stigma that's still there, which brings me to the idea that clinicians still need to go to therapy. But it's the stigma that I shouldn't have to go to therapy. And that kind of throws me off when it comes to publicly announcing the fact that I went to therapy. Because as you already said, you know, some people look at me and think I have it all together. Let me be the first to tell anybody listening to this podcast, Jamia Marie Warner does not have it all together. I never have. And my friends, Ashley and Idesta, they know. I'll be the first one to tell you, I don't know what I'm doing.
That's true.
I have no clue what I'm doing, but I feel better when I can admit that truth to myself and to others. And that's what I think, that's why I keep going in my field, because I don't know what I'm doing. That's why I go to therapy.
And that's, you know, it's been the same for me. I remember when I first, you know, started getting comfortable with my, you know, mental health and things like that, like, especially in my work field, it was hard to let people in the office, you know, because I'm like, they gonna judge me, like, you know, she's not fit for this job, and you know, things like that. So I definitely didn't want that attached to me. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, we all are human, we all go through things. And, you know, I have people that sit in my office, and they are very open, you know, with their mental health. Mm-hmm. And that makes me feel comfortable. Like, a lot of people at work, they know about my podcast. They was able to, you know, listen to the many episodes where I talked about my history, the trauma I've been through, my suicide attempt and things like that. And I'm okay with it.
And that's a great place to be. But, you know, I think a lot of us aren't comfortable yet.
Which is okay.
It's just, it's okay. It's something that, you know, you have to promote. That's why I love the fact that you have this podcast and the fact that there are other mental health outlets especially for Black clinicians and African Americans, you know, just across the board, to be able to express themselves more, because it is taboo. It is stigmatized. And that idea of not feeling like you are qualified, that's a scary feeling. And so to then put this on top of the fact that you're Black and you're a woman and you're a millennial, it's like, nobody gonna know I got troubles. I'm gonna fake it till I make it. child, you know how many clients I done had to sit there and be like, look, I have no idea what we're gonna do, because if I sit here and play with you, this is your life, and I don't want to play with your life. And then it comes to find out, you know, at the end of a session or at the end of their time, their therapy sessions, it's like, you've helped me. And I'm like, I did that? This ain't got nothing to do with me. Like, I'm telling you, you know, I have nothing to do with your progress. It's all you. And that's the same way that I kind of felt coming out of therapy. So I did therapy for about 6 months while I was in DC. I had a lot going on. I was planning a wedding. I was trying to get my license. We were about to move halfway across the country again. I was trying to find a job. I was trying to make sure my family back in Chicago was settled. You know, there was a lot going on, and good God, I just felt like I'm about to come to an end. Like, I just felt like I ain't getting married. Oh, well, we already married.
You all don't know how many times she done text me and Odessa. Like, I just want to call it quits.
Yep, we're not getting, we already married. What we need a wedding for? Like, I don't need the dress. It's okay. I don't care anymore. Then there was, you know, the idea that I am not fit to be somebody's clinician, to be a clinical social worker, just felt like so far away, because it's like, I'm taking these practice exams, I'm failing them. I should know this. Why don't I know this? And then it was the idea that I finally realized that my anxiety was getting the best of me, and I couldn't deal with it. And then it was the idea that, oh my God, you're about to move across the doggone world, and you don't feel prepared. Be it, you don't feel like you can get a job secured in time. You know, it was a lot going on. And then on top of the fact that then me and my husband, we had to live in two separate states for almost, what, 2.5 months, because I was trying to get my life together and I couldn't stop his career. On top of the fact that, okay, girl, what are you doing? Because you're also still helping other people. And I started feeling that it was a lot of transference going on between me and my clients. So I was a substance abuse, I was a senior substance abuse counselor in DC. My mother has her addiction and addictive behaviors. I would get into a session and I would feel myself starting to get angry at my client. And I'm like, I don't know this person from a can of paint. Why am I feeling this way towards them? Like, why am I not understanding where they are right now? Why is it so hard for me to help them? Even though I'm helping them, I feel myself getting hot inside. And it wasn't until I talked to my supervisor and she helped me make those connections of my counter transference between, you know, what was happening. And some of theirs was coming off on me because they realized I was younger and I was around their children's age. And so there was a lot of transference happening. And that's when it was like, okay, this is for real. Go to therapy. Because I can't do my job effectively. And when I went to therapy, I'm not going to lie. The first day I went in, I talked to the lady because I had to wait almost 2 months to even get a clinician. And so I was like, okay, fine, sure. I'll be waiting. Let me go. I go. I sit there the entire hour with my arms crossed. I'm answering questions real basic, like, I feel myself very uncomfortable. I don't want to talk to you, lady. Nothing you're going to say going to help me feel better. And I'm like, I ain't coming back. I remember, so the next day I went to work, and one of my coworkers asked me, how was it? I said, to be real, she wouldn't shut up, so I'm not going back. And he just looked at me, and I'm like, I don't want to talk to her. He's just like, so what if all your clients don't want to talk to you no more? Then what? And I'm like, fine, I'll make my next appointment. Following week comes, I go, this time we're talking, and I'm like, all right, girl, I'm gonna talk to you. And I talked to her a little bit more, and after, I felt so much better that she even commented the fact that my body language was different this time. It looked like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders, and unbeknownst to me, it had, you know. For like 40 minutes, she let me rant about how I was feeling, and I was like, ooh, girl, you listened. And it felt good. It felt good to be heard, you know. It's not to say I don't get heard by friends or my husband or other family members, but sometimes you don't want them to hear you. Sometimes you want somebody who doesn't have an opinion about your life to hear you out. And it felt good. The only downside to therapy for me was she knew my position. She knew what I was. So she knew my background was in social work. She knew my current field was in substance abuse. So a lot of times she treated me as a colleague, not as a client. And that kind of irritated me and kind of put me off to therapy for a while. So as a provider to other providers, if you are going to do therapy, I advise you to go in with the mindset of letting your therapist know exactly the relationship that you want to build. Treat me as if I was somebody who was not educated in this field. It needs to be handled as such. You know what I mean? Because she'll be saying terms. She's like, yeah, you know what that means, girl. I know what that means. Explain it. I mean, I probably should have known what it meant, per se, because that was my field. But it was like, treat me as if I am a newborn child and you are teaching me how to walk. You wouldn't just assume a toddler knows how to walk. You will make sure they know how to do these things. And so that's my biggest takeaway from therapy, is if you are a provider looking for therapy, please make sure that you create that boundary with your therapist from the go.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, because I know my therapist, she definitely know the field of work I do as well. But I remember my first therapy session, I went in, I ain't gonna lie, I just laid everything out on the table. I'm like, this is what I'm paying you for, this is what I'm here for. So I'm like, I'm not gonna waste your time, I'm not gonna waste my time. So I laid it all out, but I was like, I really needed to get that out. And even still to this day, when I go to her and, you know, process things, I literally walk out of therapy smiling. You know, I just feel so.
It feels good.
Better, you know. Yeah, it's. I don't know. I don't know.
I think the thing about therapy is that a lot of people underestimate how great it feels, how important it is, how inspiring it can be, and how it will make you realize some things about yourself that you never would have without somebody else's help. Because a lot of times, even for me, I wanted to blame my mama for a lot of stuff. I want to blame my grandma for a lot of stuff. I want to blame my family for a lot of stuff. I want to blame my husband. I want to blame the world. And I'm like, ooh, no, my bad. That was me. Sorry. And I wouldn't have got that if I didn't have someone to help me connect just some basic, simple dots of, you feel this way because this event happened. This is how you're reacting. So next time this event happens, maybe you can react this way because now you are acknowledging how you feel this way. And that's why I am a person who definitely, especially when I'm talking to clients, like, have you checked in with a therapist or anybody, any type of clinician that you're able to just express yourself freely with? I always try to compare therapists to like bartenders, right? Because when you're at your happiest and you're drunk and you're at the bar, you tell the entire bar your business. The bartender gets to know your entire life as they continue to pour you your shots. You might even give them an extra tip at the end of the night. It's because you feel comfortable, because you feel unjudged, because this person doesn't know you from a can of paint and won't remember you next week when you come in. That's the same way that you can think of therapy. This is a person that is unbiased, unjudgmental, who's going to give you their truth, but also listen to your truth. You know what I mean? And I think that's how you have to look at it. It's like, if you can tell a bartender how you exactly. feel, you can tell a therapist.
And
how
then
you
what
feel.
I also let people know is like, don't go into therapy expecting, like you say, you know, therapist is going to fix you, is going to tell you what you do. No, they, like you say, they there to, you know, like such as connecting those dots. I know me and my therapist, we, you know, go back to my childhood a lot. I'm able to connect those dots with how I'm acting today and, you know, events that I'm experiencing today, you know, because she give me those tools to use, you know, so it's definitely not, you know.
It's not an Ayana fix my life because, sweetheart, no one's getting fixed when you come out of therapy. You're getting helped. You are learning how to fix, I guess, yourself, but no one's there to put you back together. They're there to help guide. They're there to help you find solutions to what you may feel is unresolvable problems. They are there to help you navigate your own thoughts and feelings and emotions so that you can then take those tools and guide yourself into making sure that these things, you know, are worked out.
And I'm, you know, starting to realize, like, most of the work is, you know, done within myself. You know, I'm thankful for all these other, you know, outside resources such as therapy, having you all, and, you know, just I have a great support system. I have a wonderful support system,
which is great.
So, but I like most of the work is truly done from within.
And that's why I know, as you mentioned at the beginning of this, like with COVID-19, a lot of people are quote unquote bored. A lot of people are finding this time to be unbearable. And it's because of that, I want to definitely challenge people to start recognizing their feelings. Why are you feeling this way? What's going on? Take this time to actually do some self-reflection. Utilize this time to then maybe even find your local therapist, you know what I mean? But also take care of your mental health. Yeah. Unplug from the internet. I know for me, I'm very strategic now at what I'm looking at when I'm scrolling. Yeah. If I see COVID, I keep going. Because I know for me, that's a lot to deal with. You know, that builds on a lot of anxiety for me. So I have to unplug. I'm trying to use my time wisely, reading, journaling. Just use this time to learn how to build boundaries with yourself and with others, because a lot of us are so used to the go and to be in other people's time that we don't recognize that this is a time to build boundaries. When you are asked to go places, when you're asked to do things that are going against social distancing, this is a time to be no.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, your friend hearing on the radio that some neighborhood in Chicago, somebody was literally throwing an Airbnb party. And the police had to shut down the party and tell everyone to go home. Like, that's...
Yeah. Social distance does not mean go run to y'all 500 square foot home and have a party. That's the complete opposite idea of social distancing, guys. Like, again, use this time wisely and use this time to learn how to build healthy boundaries. Because it is important that we're saving each other and that we're actually utilizing this time to stop and reflect. I know it feels a lot, because for me, I was looking forward to going to work like these 2 days this week because I was able to get out of my house. But that has been canceled now. Like, I have to stay in home for the next to April 10th. I can't even leave off base, really. So it took a lot, because then I was like, I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with having to be with my own thoughts and myself. And I had to recognize, like, oh, come on, time to journal, time to paint, time to start my new hobbies. The things that I was going to start doing while I was in therapy, but I allowed time and new life events to take that away. So now I'm going to utilize this time to do those things. Like, I bought, I bought canvases and paint. I haven't painted since I was in high school. I'm not like Picasso or anything, but I'm utilizing my time now to actually do self-reflection because I haven't been able to find a therapist down here, unfortunately, because there is a very, very short supply of clinicians across the state of New Mexico. And with that being said, it's only like 8 actual African-American providers. Yeah. Even though it's only 2% Blacks down here, I get it. But we don't have a lot of options. And then the options that we do have, they haven't been consigning with my work schedule. Like, I work like 8 to 5. And so I haven't been able to find a therapist. But I also find myself lacking the energy or the want to find a therapist. Because at first I thought, I got this all figured out. I did 6 months. I don't need no more help. And then, high and behold, here I am having another panic attack the other day about the weirdest things. And I'm just like, all right, calling the counseling people now. And I did, but again, because of time constraints. And now with COVID, it hasn't been an option. Some of the places are doing telehealth, like the state has been able to do telehealth now across the state. So all clinicians will still be reimbursed through insurance. But I just haven't found the person yet. But that doesn't mean I need to stop looking for them, because I will use, like many people, I will use that as an excuse to be like, oh, well, that's a sign, I don't need it. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make sure that I keep my word as a clinician. If I can tell people to do it, I should be able to do it myself. And so
that's my therapist actually called me today. She's like, yeah, next session is going to be a phone session. I'm like, trust me, I understand. And I'm like, I'm perfectly fine with that.
This actually might be a good time for me to try it. Because it will be a phone session. But it's weird. Like, it is weird. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, it's very comfortable. But it is weird for me to be on the phone with people for a long time. Like, I mean, I talk to y'all for hours. Like, that because we talk. And it's just comfortable. It's a relationship that I know. But on the phone with a stranger, I'd be quick, 10 minutes. Hello, goodbye. Thank you for your help. So I think that's just something, though. I think every person has to work out their own awkwardness when it comes to therapy. Because it's uncomfortable. It is.
So, Jamia, what last piece of advice that you just want to let everyone know?
If I had to just have this world announcement of, like, my final thoughts and testament, it would be to tell people to stay inspired and to stay inspired by learning themselves and being themselves and thoroughly getting to know how to help other people. Like, take time to love and to know yourself, but also take that same amount of love and put into other people. That's it.
That's what our world needs. I totally agree.
And I know it sounds corny, but it's so true. Like, you never know how much you can impact a person by saying hello to them, checking on them, saying good morning, waving at the person at the grocery store, having the most random conversations with somebody in the aisle at Walgreens. Like, just learn to love yourself so that you can love others.
Thank you for sharing that. Like always, I would like to end with a quote. This quote is by Hubert Humphrey, and it states, "The greatest healing therapy is friendship and love." So again, Jamia, you know, I'm very grateful for our friendship. You have been such an important person in my life. And I thank you for continuing to lift me up, supporting me, and for always being there for me, no matter what.
Of course. Thank you for doing the same for me. One of my favorite pictures of us is us at graduation from undergrad, hugging each other and just crying automatically.
Y'all should see the whole family just around. But that seriously is one of my.
So I was like, you know, I just love you and I appreciate you for doing this. And you don't know how much you inspired me by starting your podcast, and I appreciate everything you do for me and others, and I love you, and you definitely are my favorite social.
And I love you too. So hopefully this won't be the last. You are always welcome back to the Semi Colon podcast. So just want to say thank you, and thank you all, and I can't wait to talk to you all in my next episode.